Hey everybody, I'm Lincoln, I'm an alcoholic. And Billy, thank you very much for asking me to come up here, and thanks for the warm welcome. I have a sobriety date, which is July 21st, 2003. I'm sponsored, and I understand there being a difference between having a sponsor and being sponsored today. I've always had one, just at times it's been me, and I'm the only bad one I've ever had. So I am willing to take some direction today and be sponsored, and everybody I know is really happy about that. And let's see, and I have a home group, of course, too, which also has been just a very important part of my sobriety. It is the Outlaw Safe Cracker group of Alcoholics Anonymous. And a couple of you have been there before. All of you are welcome. And we meet on Monday nights and Thursday nights. Monday nights, we've got an awesome speaker meeting, much like this meeting. And Thursday night, we go through the book, a chapter per month, and have different people come and share their experience on that. And having a home group has been real important to me. It was something that was impressed upon me since the first time I got to AA. The instructions I got were get a home group, and get a job there, and get busy, and be there. And, unless you're not even sick, because I would lie probably, but it was, if you're alive, unless you're like in the hospital sick, you need to be there, or out of town. But, at first it was, why, argue. And, but what I found out, is, that's the first place that I get to be just like you, no different, no better. It doesn't matter, what you got on or, what kind of car you drove up in. There's just something about, setting up the chairs or whatever the job is I might be doing, that all of a sudden, it kind of quiets down a little bit up here, and I belong all of a sudden. Like, it's like I've got a reason to be here. I'm taking, and all of a sudden this is my meeting, and I can kind of take some ownership of that. And, I just belong. It just kind of melts, some of the ego melts down, and, because usually that ego flares up when I'm scared anyway. I've just got some fear that, like, you're judging me, or fear that, I'm just too sick to hang out with you guys, or you guys are too sick to hang out with me. It doesn't matter. It just depends on what day of the week it is. But just something about having that home group, man. I'd be there early. Guys would start showing up. I'd be like, oh man, now I have to talk to you guys. And it just sucked. I hated it, because everybody in AA was like really happy. And I came in sick enough to, my only experience with happy was like, if you're happy, you're a loser. And that's the best I can equate that. If you come in here, or rather, I show up to AA and everyone's like, let's get coffee, let's go after the meeting and hang out. And I'm like, man, I don't want anything to do with you people. It's just like weird. And I don't want to go to coffee. I don't want to do anything. And so my best answer is like, I'm busy. No, I can't. But showing up over and over and over and kind of being forced into getting to know some people and letting them get to know me, all of a sudden I just get to be just another alcoholic, man, and what a relief that is, So those things are just hugely important in my sobriety. And then, of course, the fact that I'm lucky enough at times to be able to sponsor some other guys, that's like really when it gets kind of turned on. Initially, I didn't think that I was qualified, And fortunately, I was getting some direction on that my sponsor wasn't really too concerned with my qualifications. It just so happened that I was on step 12, so it made some sense that maybe I might try to work with some alcoholics, And maybe, this experience that I'm so ashamed of and I don't want anybody to know about, maybe it could actually turn out to be kind of valuable, And it might actually be something that you know, I don't have to be ashamed of it anymore. You know, I'm not running around, like, advertising everything either. But at the same time, you know, listen to another guy's footstep, and you see that look of terror and fear. They're convinced that they're the only person that's ever done that, you know, or the only person who's ever not done that. And you're like, hey, man, you know, I'm right here with you, you know. And, you know, it's a whole new meaning, so you don't have to be alone. You know, obviously we do this together, and thank God for that. Because I've tried it alone. But just, you know, you're not alone in the sense of, yeah, you're not the only guy who's made your mom cry, you know, or you're not the only guy who's no-showed to work over and over and over, you know, and or whatever, you know, whatever is that thing that we're going to take to the grave, you know, you're not alone. But, you know, all those things are part of my story, and I think that's what the book suggests that we do, is that we share our story, you know, that tell you what I was like, you know, and what happened and what I'm like now. And I have often gotten that really confused with telling you what it was like and what happened and what it is like now. And I had explained to me, and after I was done arguing with my sponsor about this, you know, how semantical he was, It made a difference in kind of what I hope to share, because I've talked about it a lot, and I've gone to meetings where I've only heard it, you know, and the it is, you know, kind of the byproduct of my alcoholism. The it is what happens to, in a way, probably anybody who drinks like me, whether they're alcoholic or not. But, you know, like if my saintly grandmother, you know, was to drink bourbon whiskey the way I like to drink bourbon whiskey, you know, she might wreck some cars and get some DUIs and, you know, get some drunk in Publix and, you know, Lord knows what she might do on top of the bar late at night. I mean, I don't know. But being drunk, I mean, that's kind of what we do when we're drunk, you know. That doesn't necessarily make her or anyone else an alcoholic. But when I come in here to meeting one and I hear, well, I lost my house, you know, and I lost my wife, and I, whatever, you know, consequence, which, I, you know, I love hearing about consequences, don't get me wrong, you know, but if I only hear that, and I only hear what it was like for you, then I run the risk of not identifying with you. I say, well, I never wrecked my car, you know, I never got fired from a job. Well, I mean, I've done both, but that doesn't make me an alcoholic, you know. And if I somehow confuse that with being an alcoholic, I can say, well, I never did those things. I don't need to be here, you know. Perfect, you know, yeah, I don't need to be here. So I'm out the door. And I tried, man, I tried so hard to not need to be here and to try to find a way. It's just really easy. When I got here, it's so easy to find ways where I'm just not like you and I don't fit in, and that's, you know, again, that's all that ego stuff, you know, that will keep me separated from you and ultimately keep me separated from the only thing that actually stands a chance at keeping me sober, and that's my higher power, you know. So anyway, so what I was like, you know, I am a guy that suffers from the disease of alcoholism, which when I got here, I was really confused that what that really meant was that I just drank way too much. And I did, you know. But what I understand it to be now is it's just more than that, you know, that this drinking is a symptom of my problem, you know, but it is not the problem in itself. You know, that's what the problem looks like, especially to other people who are in my life. You know, they will beg me to stop drinking, you know, and they don't understand why I drink the way I drink. You know, they don't understand alcoholism, so they ask those kinds of questions like, she's such a nice girl, you know, you think you'd quit for her sake, and all that kind of stuff. And they don't understand that I don't have any real say in the matter. I'm way past that point, you know, that this drinking is just not really an option for me. But when I got to AA, I thought for sure, if I just quit drinking, everything else will be fine, you know. I'm not a bad person. I'm not stupid. I know that I'm supposed to go to work. I was just too drunk to go to work or too hungover to go, you know. And I know that I'm supposed to pay bills, you know. I get it, you know. And And I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't have cheated on my girlfriend if I wasn't drunk. So if I just quit drinking, everything else would be fine. You know, so if that was the case and that was true, then I would only need to really work one step, you know, and I've tried that too. But what happened is that without the drink, my life starts looking exactly like it did at the worst, my worst bottom with alcohol. All of a sudden now, with, you know, not drinking and not changing through taking the steps, it all looks the same. You know, the same people are crying, you know, the same doors are slamming, and it's just the same deal, but now I can't blame it on alcohol, and it kind of points that I might have a deeper problem in here, you know, and it might be related to kind of my spiritual condition. So that's what I'm like. You know, I suffer from alcoholism, which I understand now is more than just the drinking. It's that I've got this kind of spiritual deficit, that I'm selfish to the extreme. You know, I'm self-centered to the extreme. I've got just a ridiculous amount of fears that only have to do with me. You know, I'm not worried that you're not going to be able to pay your rent. You know, I'm worried that I'm going to get fired from my job, and I'm worried that I'm not going to this, or I'm worried that I'm going to have to do that, or me, and I'm going to do this and that, and then what about tomorrow, and I'm going to, you know, and I'm just round and round and round, man. The rat cage is spinning off the hinges, you know, and until I take a couple drinks, man, and then it's like that sense of ease and comfort comes right away, everything kind of settles down again, and I'm like, man, what was I so worried about? This is fine. You know, but, you know, that sets up this kind of physical part of my disease where this is where I'm different than the average drinker. You know, whether, I drank with guys that on the outside they look like that we drink the same. They love drinking like I love drinking. They love hanging out in the same bars I love hanging out in, you know. They get really excited about getting off work and going to drink, same as I do. And, I mean, for years I used to wake up in jail and weird places or don't know where I am and just wonder, like, how come I'm the one that keeps waking up here? And I drank, you know, with so-and-so last night. We drank the same amount. And he made it home. Like, how do you do that? How do you just get home? You know, and, but I, you know, regardless of how much this guy's drinking, I'm different than the average drinker, you know, that I have alcoholism, which the physical component of that means that I have a reaction to when I physically ingest alcohol, and it sets up this craving that's beyond my control, you know, that doesn't matter what happened yesterday, doesn't matter what I think might happen if I were to drink, nothing matters. It doesn't matter if I have the job interview of a lifetime, like my dream job interview is tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock, and all signs are pointing that, like, you know what, you should probably not drink tonight. So what happens to me is, well, the other part of the disease, which is in a lot of ways, in my experience, more problematic than the physical allergy, because the real problem there is that my mind says, well, you don't want to get drunk. You definitely don't want to get drunk because you've got that interview tomorrow night. But you could just have a couple. You know, just kind of take the edge off a little bit. You know, you definitely don't want to do all that stuff you did last night. Ever again, probably. But you definitely don't want to do that tonight. So I know what I'm going to do. I'm not going to go out to the bar tonight. But I'm just going to pick up a six-pack. You know, 3-4 beers, you know, make a nice meal. Watch some TV, I'll be in bed by 10 o'clock easy, you know. Get a good night's sleep, wake up, and I'll be fresh, relaxed, and ready to go. And so I get the six-pack, I drink 2-3 of those bad boys, I forget about dinner, and all of a sudden I'm itching like, well, you know, I mean, I wonder what, I bet so-and-so's hanging out down there, you know, and it's only like 9. I can get down there for just a couple real quick, you know, and then I'm down there, and next thing you know, I'm the one who's trying to figure out where we're going to have the after party, you know, and you know the rest of the story. You know, I wake up the next morning somewhere, probably after this interview, you know, has already passed, and I didn't make it, And, you know, just memories of why what happened last night will become so painful that I'll somehow convince myself that I didn't even want that job. That job wasn't for me. Man, you know, that place cannot appreciate the kind of talent I would have brought to that job. You know, and I'll make up some kind of story. I can remember part of last night and all this, and I'll start into making some promises to myself that, man, you know, I'm definitely not going to drink like that tonight, though. You know, I'm going to take it easy tonight. I'm going to go to work here now, and, you know, tonight I'm just going to lay low. And, you know, I mean, all that coupled with, like, having a hangover and, you know, have to maybe, like, smoke some outside issues just to kind of get settled down enough to get to work. And then, I don't know, 2-3 o'clock, I'm starting to kind of feel a little better, able to hold some food down. And I start thinking, well, you know, maybe I'll just pick up a six-pack tonight. You know, I don't want to get crazy like I got last night, you know. But maybe if I just got a six-pack, then I could just drink a couple beers and just take the edge off and then, you know, make a nice dinner and just relax, man. I'll be in bed and I'll be fresh tomorrow. You know, and next thing you know, I'm at the after party waving my shirt around like an idiot or whatever, running naked through the street or get locked up in jail. I mean, who knows what's going to happen once I start drinking, you know? And day after day after year after, you know, and so, you know, time goes on, you start racking up, you know, wrecked cars and, you know, just ridiculous things that happen to a drunk, you know, happened to me. I don't know about y'all, but like, the stuff that was happening to me was just ridiculous. You know, I mean, half of it was kind of funny. I mean, I'd look back at it now and, you know, I was able to even laugh about it at the time, just kind of joke it off, you know, but, it's just pathetic. I mean, there's nothing like glamorous about my drinking. It was just mostly just a bunch of pathetic kind of stuff, you know. You know, I grew up in Williamsburg, and my mom was an alcoholic, but she was just getting sober when I was around 2 or 3, so she's dragging my brother and I to the AA meetings, and it's like, you know, early 70s, and those meetings, man, were like smoky, like stop, drop, and roll smoky, and we're just going to all these meetings, and we're picking up slogans, and my mom, you know, would get a little worked up, and we'd be like, easy does it. You know, one day at a time, Mom, and, you know, she's not really, she probably didn't think that was too cool, but, you know, I realize now that I'm starting to show signs of alcoholism, you know, way back then, like even, you know, way before Drink One, you know, just like the lying, cheating, and stealing, lying when I don't have to, you know, making up stories, because I've got some kind of fear in me that I'm not going to be good enough or something. I'll just make up a story when the truth is so much easier. You know, there's no reason not to tell the truth. I'll just make up some lie about it. You know, I was in the grocery store, like, I was like 8, and I was really into like climbing trees and stuff like that. And I saw these like dog harnesses that you put on like a pit bull or something that go around the shoulders. And I'm thinking, man, I could work that like some kind of harness and get some rope on that and climb up in a tree. I was probably about to try one on or something in the store. And, I'm a little weird, but this is what I'm doing. And the shop guy comes up to me and he's like, hey, do you have a dog? I'm like, oh, yeah. I don't want to tell him the truth, but, like, no, I'm thinking about, you know, climbing trees with this thing. I'm just like, yeah, I got a dog. Yeah, he's like, okay, well, what's his name? And I'm making up names and all this stuff and telling him, you know, how old the dog is and just running wild with it, you know, because I'm just too afraid to tell you the truth, you know? I mean, like, I don't understand that, you know? I don't know if that makes me an alcoholic, but I see these signs of what I know now as, you know, as part of my alcoholism, you know? And I was stealing all over town, state trooper knocking on my door when I was in second grade, and they're looking for me and my brother because we've been robbing the town blind. My mom's trying to get sober, and she's got these two thieves for children, and she's taking them to the drugstore to make their amends way before Drink One. You know, way before I get to AA, I'm already making my amends list. And they have us working all over town, working this, you know, I'm at this hardware store hauling brush one summer, you know, at 9 or something like that, you know, and that's just kind of, I don't know, that's kind of how I started growing up. And about the whole time, my mom's like, you know, you probably should not start drinking. You should probably stay away from alcohol. It's probably not going to be a good thing for you to ever drink, really, you know, and she would say things like, you know, if you're at a party, you can just drink a Coke. I'm like, I've never had a drink before, but I just know that that's just not going to be good enough. Like, I don't know anything about alcohol, but I know that's not the kind of party that I want to go to, man. Like, a Coke? Like, I mean, come on now. That's not any kind of party. And I finally get curious enough to try some alcohol, and I'm convinced, man, this is just one more thing she's wrong about, you know. All that other stuff that she's been telling me, you know, and here's just another, like, we're just different, you know, she's from a different generation, and just, you know, but man, this alcohol, man, I like this stuff, this feels good, you know, what is the problem, you know, everything I know about alcohol is you drink that, and you're, like, basically, like, drink and die, you know, like, or, you know, drink, and your life is going to go down the toilet, and I have a couple of drinks, and I feel better than I've ever felt in my life, you know, so what could be wrong about this, you know, and the thing about it is that for a long time, it was good, you know? I mean, if it had stayed like that, well, you'd have a different speaker tonight, you know? But alcohol worked, man. It worked real well for what I suffer with, you know? It did for me what I couldn't do for me, you know? It settled those fears, man. And I actually even became more interested in you when I drank, you know? Probably, you know, mostly self-seeking kind of, but still, it was working for me, and had a good run with it for a while, but every once in a while they just kind of show up and kind of bite me. I'd be like, man, what happened there? You know, and I started working in restaurants when I was like 16 in high school, and I was washing dishes, and I tried alcohol, not able to buy it, but man, every once in a while, you know, those trays would come back, and there'd be a couple half-empty glasses of wine on there, and it just seemed like a shame to let those go to waste, you know, and so I polished a couple of those off, and my boss is like, why do you keep using the bathroom? Why do you keep up and down stairs to the bathroom, you know? You getting high? I'm like, no. I'm getting high? I think I'm hammered, though. I'm like drunk off of, you know. I don't know, man. I remember I said a bunch of inappropriate stuff to my female boss that night, and then left work, stumbling out of there, and walked to my girlfriend's house, was knocking on her door or scratching her window or something late at night, and trying to get her to come out and play. And I mean, but that's no reason we had quit drinking. You know, it's just kind of what I don't know. Just another night of drinking, but. It was really, I guess, I don't know, I started along the way, I guess it was after high school, probably somewhere, I didn't go to college right after high school, took a couple of years off, was just working and whatnot, and start drinking as much as I can. I got a fake ID at this point, so I'm pretty much drinking every day, and but I don't know, it's a couple of years after that where I started to realize I don't think I'm really drinking like everybody else, you know. And it would be something like I go over to a buddy's house and say, you want to drink a couple of beers before we go to work and work in a restaurant? And I said, sure. So we have a couple, and he's ready to go to work all of a sudden. I'm like, man, we got a job to do here. You know, we got to. Our work is actually to be done here with, you know, with the rest of the beers that are in that fridge. You know, that's the job I'm interested in doing now. And this guy's, like, seriously just, like, ready to go to work. You know, I mean, for him, just a couple beers, is, you know, it was like drinking, I don't know, a couple sodas, you know. And for me, it was enough to kick up that craving where the only thing that matters to me now is where's that next drink coming from. And I would start calling out of work and making excuses, and I would get hammered drunk. He's at work, and he's like, man, what is wrong with you? I'm like, I don't know. I have no idea. You know, and I don't know. And, you know, so that kind of stuff would happen, and I'd start wondering, what is wrong with me? You know, and I'd have problems in the relationships that I was having with women, you know, where I would tell them that I was going to be somewhere, and like there was this Christmas party I was supposed to go to with this girl that I really cared for, you know. I guess I was just going to stop at the bar for just a couple drinks, you know, real quick, and then go pick her up. And, you know, 6:30 turns into 7:30, turns into 9, and I finally get over there, and she's all dressed up and got her hair done, and she's got the skirt on, and she's just in tears. She just, like, can't understand, like, what is wrong with you? And I'm like, I don't know. I'm sitting here staggering around, and I got nothing to say. I don't know what's wrong with me, and I don't know why I've hurt you again. But I know one thing is that when they're crying, whether it's the girlfriend or my mom or whoever's, you know, taking, you know, shaking the finger or whatever. I mean, I know that when I'm telling them, I will never do this again. You know, like, I'm so sorry. I mean, I cannot believe I've really screwed up here. I know it, and I'm sorry, and it won't happen again. It won't ever happen again. And just promise. I mean, you strap the lie detector on me, and man, I'm telling you the truth. I'm not trying to get out of trouble. I'm not trying to get the heat off. I'm really ashamed. You know, I feel like a piece of dirt. Like I've done this again. You know, that's not what I want to do, and I don't know why I keep doing it either. You know. So, you know, maybe I'm able to lay low a little bit, and then, sure enough, you know, my mind, you know, which is where the real problem resides for me now, will tell me something. It'll tell me whatever it needs to tell me to have me do the most insane thing that I ever do, which is to take the first drink. You know, my last sponsor used to tell me that all the time. He's like, the craziest thing I ever do, I do when the breathalyzer reads 0.000, and that's take the first drink. You know, knowing what happens to me when I drink, I mean, you just have to be crazy to pick up another drink. I am at a point, at this point in my story, where it's like, I know that if I'm going to drink one beer, I have no idea what's going to happen to me, man. I might end up in Chicago. I might end up in the jail. I might end up wondering why the bed is so wet, or I might end up, you know, in a ditch. I don't know what's going to happen to me, you know. But man, you know, I sure would like to have a drink right now, you know, and it's just gone. You know, I can't remember why it's a bad idea for me to drink. And that's kind of the crux of my problem, is that I can't play the tape through. I mean, give me a break, man, you know. I can't rely on my brain to say, hey there, easy fella. That's not a good idea for you, you know. It just doesn't work like that, you know. So what happened? All right, so, you know, I carry on with all this stuff. I mean, this is all so general, but I don't know. I was getting evicted from some of the places I lived in, and then I kind of entered into mastering the art of living in non-traditional spaces, like storage units. I was, when things were still good, I had like a storage unit, and I could pull up, hopefully not put the car in the ditch, climb the chain link barbed wire fence after dark, because you're not allowed in there after dark, you know. So you have to climb the fence, and you get up, and you do your combination, and you get in the shed, and screw in the light bulb. You know, I got this little socket thing, and the one light bulb that's hanging down. I got my microwave plugged in there, and you know, pee in some old coffee can and sleep on the couch, and that's, hey man, that's working out good. You know, I'm happy with that. That's not a problem, you know, because I can drink like I want to drink, you know. And I don't know what happened where that sweet arrangement kind of came to an end, but I do remember being evicted from one of the places I lived in, and there being a pretty bad fight with a friend of mine and the landlord, and all my stuff getting thrown out on the street. And so I decided I'm going to live. A buddy of mine's got an apartment across town, and he's got this really sweet, like, kitchen nook. I'm thinking, you know, with the right couple of touches, I could really turn that into something that I could live in, you know, and I could make that kind of special. And so I put up a little curtain, separates that as my room, and I get a little twin mattress and a couple cardboard boxes and a couple bandanas over the cardboard boxes for my little tables and my little alarm clock because I got, you know, places to be and I got to be on time. And put a little plant over in the corner, just kind of dress it up a little bit. And I'm back in business, man. You know, everything's cool. And there's a funny story about being in that one apartment where we're having a party one night, and I go into my room, and here's this girl. I look over, and here's this girl with her pants down on the floor, and there's just mud. She's sitting on my furnace, mud just spraying out of this thing, and the cardboard box is just sagging in, and she's on the floor, and she looks up at me and says, "Get out of the bathroom!" And I'm like, man, all right, you know, this is kind of how I'm living, man, you know, and that's just another normal night for a guy like me, you know, and I don't know, I guess get to a point where I realize that as glamorous as this life is, you know, this is not really, I need to do something more here, you know, and so I was able to apply to go to school in Richmond at VCU, and I had been a musician, this whole time growing up. I was playing in bands and stuff like that, and so I auditioned for music school at VCU, you know, and I get in, and I'm loving it, man. It's a great opportunity. I'm super excited, and you know, it's something that I want to do, and but I start having a lot of problems there too. You know, it doesn't matter that I like being there. You know, it doesn't matter that this is kind of like a dream of mine, you know. Because once I take that first drink, man, all bets are off, you know. And so it's just different circumstances now. Now I can't get to the 8 o'clock class, you know. And so when I do show up, you know, I've got to lie about why I wasn't there, you know. Because I don't want you to think that I'm a drunk, you know. So I got to tell you, you know, I had some problem here, sick this day, this person did me wrong over here, and problem. And my transcripts, I mean, you can just track my alcoholism through my transcripts, man, because it was like, you know, I'd kind of get it all together, and the grades would kind of go up, I'd be doing pretty good, and then it would all kind of fall to pieces, man, and it'd just be like, Withdraw, FC, just get out of school quick, you know, before it got really bad, you know, and then just lay low for a couple of years. And I'd, like, dust myself off, register again, get in for some classes, and be kind of doing okay, doing all right, and then just the drinking would pick back up, and I couldn't handle it, and I'd just fall to pieces, not show up to class, and withdraw from all of them again, and just, like, man, I just can't do this. Like, I can't seem to get through school here, you know. And this goes on for years and years and years. And what makes it really troubling is that I'm studying something that I love. I mean, this is like, you know, I want to be good at this. And I know that if I just didn't have this problem with the alcohol, I would be okay. You know, it involved a lot of, like, practicing and things like this. And so now the story kind of goes into, like, well, tonight I'm just going to practice for, like, 3 hours. You know, I'm going to be ready for my lesson. I'm just going to practice, you know. And I'd get in there, and I would try with all my might to just stay in the room and practice. But, man, I would just start getting, you know, my head would start spinning. Not spinning, but, you know, I'd just start thinking, like, a little edgy. And, you know, I just need, like, just a couple drinks. And then I'll come back down and finish up practicing. And, you know, then the story kind of evolves into that. So then, you know, how that ends. You know, I take a couple. You know, next thing you know, someone else shows up at the bar, and I'm closing it down, and, you know, I get that, you know, those ideas at the bar, like the game plan, like, well, all right, I know what I'm going to do. I'm not going to practice tonight. I'm going to just finish up drinking here tonight, but tomorrow I'm going to practice for 7 hours. You know, I'm going to make it up tomorrow, and get my little game plan together so I can just relax and drink comfortably, and then I carry on. You know, and I don't know. I mean, I just can't live like this. Basically, I'm picking up so much shame and fear. You know, I'm starting to black out when I drink. So, that gets really creepy when I show up places where you know more about the way I drink than I do, you know, and you give me that look that I get really comfortable, really familiar with, not comfortable, but, you know, still working in a restaurant, so I'll show up for my shift, you know, and then someone will walk out of the kitchen and they'll just be like, man, just give me that look, shake their head and just kind of keep on walking. And I got to figure out real quick, like, what did I say? What did I do? What happened? Do I owe that guy money? Did I pay my tab? You know, and I have no idea. That guy knows more about the way I drank last night than I do, you know. And so I become a good actor, you know, the chameleon. I can just kind of show up and learn to laugh off all of your, you know, finger pointing. You know, I've got a good excuse for you quick, you know, or can deflect that kind of negative attention away from myself. And blackouts make for good acting, you know, in my experience. And made me a bit of a good liar. And the problem with that is that I carried around so much guilt and shame because, you know, I get out of one of those situations where someone's asking me what I did, where were you, this and that, and I'm like trying to come off cool and collected, but on the inside, I am falling apart, you know, and just sweating and nervous, you know, and I finally get away from that situation, a moment with myself, I'm just like, man, what is wrong with you? Why do you keep doing this, you know, and best answer I've ever got is I have no idea. You know, I don't know. I know I drink too much. And I'd probably even go so far as to say that I'm an alcoholic, which I would have just equated to I'm an alcoholic because I drink too much. You know. But, you know, why does a guy like me get sober? I don't know. I mean, it's not like I had, you know, an intervention. It's not like I had, you know, some kind of bright light experience or anything like that. I mean, I had so many consequences. I'd had so many mornings where I woke up swearing to never drink again. So many nights hanging my head in the toilet swearing I would never drink again. That I don't know why that one morning when I woke up and said I'm not going to drink again that I didn't, you know. I suspect that it has something to do with just being given some kind of gift, just a little bit of grace for a moment. I mean, just this split second, I was able to see the truth about me, you know, and just really see me for what is happening. And I'm a guy that cannot, on his own power, not drink, you know, in spite of how much I want to or in spite of how much you want me to. In spite of all the good reasons why I shouldn't, I cannot do it. You know, I didn't share all the experiences of me trying. I mean, I know I can't because I tried. You know, if I could, I'd probably be controlling it out there. But I did. You know, I kept thinking, well, if I just only drink beer, you know, or maybe if I only drink whiskey, or maybe if I only drink at home, or maybe if I just never drink at home, or whatever the thing would be. And finally, you know, I don't know. I just know I can't do anything about it. And I get this kind of this moment that I attribute to some kind of power greater than me. You know, I remember one night being hammered on the out on the beach and just having it out with God. You know, just finger pointing and cussing and just, you know, either fix me or kill me because this sucks, man. You know, and well, I don't know. God's timetable didn't happen overnight, but somewhere along the line, I started seeing the truth with me, and then I would drink, and I'd still be miserable. And I'd drink more, and I'd still be full of fear. And it's kind of hard not to see the truth about me in those circumstances, you know, and I was lucky enough to know about AA, so I came here. And my problem there was that I knew a lot about AA when I got here. You know, I knew too much. And like I said earlier, when I got here at day one, man, people just freaked me out, you know. I just thought that AA was just full of a bunch of losers, man. You guys just couldn't figure out how to drink. You know, that's why you're here. And I kind of forgot I'm in that camp, too. But I'm different. You know, I'm a little different than some of y'all. I still got a little, you know, a little something. And happy people just freaked me out. Happy people just seem like losers, and I don't want anything. I don't want your little coffee party. I don't want to go get pizza with you. You know, I'm not happy about getting sober at that point. I wanted to be able to drink and just not have any problems. I didn't want to get sober. But I got, I don't know. I don't, again, so that's where it kind of comes back to. I don't know how I got here or why I stayed, you know. Because I wasn't terribly excited about not drinking. It terrified me, man. You know, I mean, I got to that point where not drinking just was awful. Terrible. Fear, you know, just out of my mind crazy. And then so I would drink. And it was terrible. Full of fear. So I'm like, what do I do now? You know, drinking is no good. And not drinking is no good. What's left for a guy like me, man? That's that that turning point, you know. That's what, you know, the book talks about that as being, you know, knowing loneliness as few people do, you know, where I can't imagine a life with drinking. I certainly can't imagine a life without drinking, you know. So my options are just getting smaller and smaller and smaller because the only ideas for life I've ever had are mine, you know. And I can't come in here and see what y'all are doing. I want to come in here and tell you how well I am. You know, I want to come in here and just have you pat me on the back for what a great little AA member I am. And, you know, tell you all my little stories about drinking. But the truth is, I don't know anything about staying sober. I don't know anything about a life trying to stay sober, you know. And so I didn't come in here and, you know, just get in line, get a sponsor, and do it all right. I did it my way. And did it my way, and my way, and my way. And when I was finally done drinking, you know, I was beaten up to a point where I was willing to start taking a little bit of direction, you know. And no human power can manage my life, you know, obviously. But, man, I've been lucky enough to hook up with some guys in AA who've got some experience at living sober, you know, and some experience of practicing these principles in all their affairs. So naturally they can share that experience with me, you know, and that's what they did. They took me through the steps and helped me to learn through making a ton of mistakes, but learn very slowly how to rely on me less and on God more, you know. And that has just been this process that I'm still definitely working on now. You know, what I'm like now is that, you know, I can tell you that I have changed. You know, I'm not the same person that showed up here. Some kind of rearrangement has occurred in me that I didn't do. You know, because I have problems today in my life, you know, and I've got things that scare me out of my mind. But it just doesn't come up drink, and I don't know why. I mean, I do, but I mean, but all that does is that points out that something has changed in me, you know, that I have been able, with your help, to tap into some kind of power that's here, you know, that has been able to take away that insanity, you know, that split second where it's a good idea to drink. That has somehow just been taken away, and that, so now, you know, I've been restored to sanity in that area, that I've had thoughts about drinking, but they're just like thoughts, you know. I don't know. I am much more inclined today to try to be honest with another human being. You know, mostly my sponsor. You know, I'm honest as much as I can be with everybody, but I'm completely honest with my sponsor. You know, even when I don't want to. I was at my sponsor's house earlier today, and on the car ride over there, I'm thinking about a couple really good stories I could tell him that would keep me from having to tell him the truth, because it was, I mean, it scared me to death to try to have to tell him that I did it again, man, you know, or this happened again. And he can't see me that way. He can't, you know, look at me like that and know the truth about me. but something has changed in me where those are just thoughts, man. I show up at his house and I'm like, all right, you ready for this? Check it out. You know? And that's cool. I mean, I'm all right with that. I mean, I'm at a place where I see that now as just part of, you know, just part of my alcoholism, man. It's just fear. You know, it's just fear. I've never had a sponsee come to my house and, you know, tell me some tragic secret, you know, that has made me think like, oh my, you did what? You know? I think you better leave. You know? I mean, that's never happened, man. You know, my last sponsor pointed out that, you know, we get connected here through our brokenness. That's where we connect. I don't connect with you where I'm really good at something. You know, I come in here thinking that I need to be really good at stuff or really capable, and so I try to impress you, and all that does is separate me from you, you know, and in turn, essentially separates me from my higher power, you know. But when I can come in here and just be honest and tell you that, man, I'm having a hell of a time with these character defects, or I'm having a hell of a time with judgment or fear or whatever the deal is, then something powerful happens, and somebody will step up and say, yeah, man, me too. Or, I had that problem, and this is what I did. You know, when I started sponsoring people, I'd say, I hear what you're saying, and this is what you should do. And I'd have no experience with it. But I have a pretty good idea of what you might want to do about it, you know. And I would share my opinions with people, you know. And I was told that, you know, it's better that we share our experience here. You know, my experience is much more valuable than my opinion, and so consider yourself warned. Because I have opinions, but they're just not really that useful to other alcoholics, you know, unless it's just casual conversation. But you know, when it comes down to, you know, trying to carry some kind of message to somebody who really wants it, you know, I've been deeply affected and moved by guys' experiences here, you know. People telling stories about the amends they made, and you know, we've all heard that stuff, and I've had those experiences too. You know, I mean, I mean to kind of tie it into parts of the story I told tonight. You know, I mean, I did get sober, but in time, I eventually went back to school. You know, and I finally got that degree. And now it's like one of the things I brag about the most. Not that I got the degree, but that it only took me 16 years. And it proves that I'm smart. And so, but when I went back, you know, I went back to school after I had already made amends to some of those professors. So I show up for class, and they're like, hey, man, how's it going? They're like, are you still sober? Are you still doing that? And I'm like, yeah, I am, you know. And my private instructors that I had was a guy that, I just, you know, embarrassed myself in front of this guy for years. And here's a guy that I just truly respected, you know, and I knew that I could have done anything that he had ever asked me to do if I wasn't a drunk, you know. And I went back to school and finished up with some of the lessons that I had with him the semester that he died. He died that semester. And I was able to go to his funeral. I was able to just show up as a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Not that, you know, anybody told anybody about that, you know, but because of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was able to be there. I had made amends to him, a lot of which he didn't really understand, and it didn't matter, but I wrote him a letter, too, after he died, and I wrote him a letter, and tucked that in his jacket, and, you know, those are some of the experiences we get to have here, and we did this, all the students got together and did a performance for him. So it's one of many, many things that, you know, I get to do today. I mean, little things like my mom's not afraid to answer the telephone, You know, what a gift. Okay, you know, she will tell me that she's proud of me, you know, when I know that I worried her sick, you know, and I don't know, man, I get to have a life where I'm relatively free today, and I get to actually show up for my own life and pursue it, you know, and that's a gift. I am currently engaged to a woman that I met in AA, and man, talk about having to come face to face with your own defects of character. I've got a lot of work to do, you know. But it's cool, you know. We have been able to invite God into our relationship, and we try to practice these principles as much as we can, imperfectly, but it's been, I've just learned a lot, you know, learned a lot in that relationship. And it's funny, I actually spoke Friday night in Richmond, and she was there, and she had spoke at that same meeting a couple weeks before I did, and when she spoke, there was like, man, it was like not an empty seat anywhere, it was just like full house, you know. And I got there, and it was like ghost town. And and even the guy who asked me to speak there, the chairperson, couldn't even make it. You know, I was just like, man, what is up with that, you know? And yeah, and I get here, like, basement for you. And God has a way of keeping me right size, for sure. But I don't know, I felt so weird Friday night when I was telling my story. It's just one of those nights, you know. And but I didn't mention, you know, Natalie was there. I didn't mention her, and she's like, you didn't even mention me, you know. And so I was like, all right, well, now that I'm being recorded, I better definitely mention how much I love you. But anyway, you know, I really am very grateful to be sober today, you know, to be asked to come and give something back to Alcoholics Anonymous. Man, I owe AA. I owe big, you know, and I'll never pay it back, you know, but I'll say yes, you know, and I mean, and what an honor it is to be asked to do anything, you know. So, thank you very much for listening, and good night.